I have a background of coming out of here. I went to the inner city of Philadelphia for 3 years. Where I served was where Rocky was filmed. So everyone started off with, yo, Padre, you know, you're going to have services this week or what? And we started off with 35 worshipers in a burned out church. And when I left, we were up to 120 after 3 years. And there's a lot of things I found out about myself and about the church I wish I had learned earlier. One of them was an understanding of the nature and function of congregations. What I do with computers is not so much, I mean, there's some neat stuff you can do with computers. If you want to flip around, you can get on games on there, and I got a great golf game. You know, and that's the way most folks think of computers. Instead, we need to be thinking of them as ministry tools. What we've got, the challenge of the 20th century and now the 21st century is going to be, how are we going to use all the stuff God has given to us that the business world has stolen? You know, God gave typewriters to the church and mimeograph to the church and telephone to the church and jet airplanes to the church. He gave all kinds of things to the church. He gave smart folks. He gave marketing. He gave public speaking. He gave it all to the church. And somehow it's been taken over by business, and we've let it go by. One of the gifts he gave to the church was the modern technology that's evolved into computers. This is one of the computers that's from our congregation, and so you know that I do know a little bit about what I'm talking about. We installed, I was the head of the project for installing a $50,000 computer system in our church. So everybody's got one on their desk, and they're all hooked in together, and it all works. I try to learn as little as I can about how computers work. The reason is because everybody's got a computer expert, and when you get among computer experts, they always want to talk about megabytes and this and that and the RAM cards and what do you think about disk caching and all the technical stuff that nobody really cares about. And who keeps me honest is my father, who looks down at the keyboard and starts going like this. And if I can explain it to him how to work it, it's going to work out okay. What we've done as a congregation is made a commitment. Now, my commitment to this so far has been about 1,500 hours. That's brought me to this point and what we call the pastor's toolbox at this point. I'm not going to talk all that much about our program other than to say at the end, I'll give a little summary and say if anybody wants to look at this a little further, be happy to. What I'd like to speak an awful lot about is the church itself and the use of computers in the church. What I found really helpful for me is, and the stuff that folks give away is important, because I'm giving you away. Alvin sells this for, I think, $5.95, and I buy it from the author for $1. But I think that's an important book. It's important for me. Once I got out of the small parish, so I've served a very small parish, and built it from a family church into really a pastoral church, and went through all the struggles with that. As a result, I'm serving now in an extremely large parish. We had this last weekend, I was gone Monday night, but we already had 1,700 worshipers on Sunday, and we still had one more service to go Monday night. So we've got an awful lot of loose ends to keep track of. This has helped me, and it's not going to help right now if you flip through it too much, other than to say, if you can't read up here, you ought to look at the pictures. A gentleman named Arlen Rothage came up with these models of the church, which helped me. And what I really can't defend is the numbers he's attached to them, because it really doesn't matter. The numbers really don't matter. You're talking about style. When Rick was talking about Mrs. Blank, in my first parish, I had a Mr. and Mrs. Blank. They all seemed to end with an E. at the last name. But it was exciting times for me because I didn't understand how the church worked. I had come from a different model, and I said, well, here's how new people come into the church. Basically, within Rothage's understanding is within the church of 0 and 50 active members, which is 0 to 50 worshipers. Now, this is in the Episcopal Church, and you can add probably another 25 or so on to the Missouri Synod because we have a little larger congregations. The way somebody comes in is they meet a gatekeeper at the door who introduces them around. The gatekeeper, in my case, was John Anton. He saw visitors and saw an opportunity to serve. And what he did, he grabbed them. And the problem with the family church, the smaller congregation, is that in general, folks want you to be what's listed here as the family chaplain. Now let me tell you about the family chaplain, and you all are gonna say, uh-huh, I know that one. How about when someone goes in the hospital, you meet them after they've registered in their room, and you have a prayer with them. The night before surgery, you go and serve them communion. When they wake up out of surgery, you have a prayer of thanksgiving, and then it's a daily visit after that. Folks in this size parish want you to be something. They want you to be the guy that they go to in deep trouble. And it's not that in other sized parishes it's not the same thing, but there's a specific function. One of the things is you can't be a prophet here. You can be the family chaplain. You can be the guy who gets called up in a case of need, the fellow who comes to all the baptism parties, who does that whole circuit. The man who preceded me, who had the spiritual gift of mercy, which I do not have, which makes me really unable to function in this size congregation, had quite a few shut-ins. And when I came there, folks expected me to be able to spend time with them over coffee, come over and make dinner with them, spend hours and hours. And that's just not me. I got many spiritual gifts. One of them is not mercy. I'd be a miserable nurse and a miserable doctor. And I wasn't real happy as a small parish pastor. Now, what happens here, though, is that the gatekeeper has to deal with the matriarchs and patriarchs of the congregation. And you really get introduced to a congregation through them, and they say they're yes or they're no's. I mentioned earlier one of my new members in this congregation quit after I was gone on vacation, and members of the congregation came to her. One of the matriarchs and patriarchs came and said, you know, at your age, only hookers have hair that long. Now, that's definitely sending a signal as to whether or not they want you as a member of that congregation. And so that, you know, that's just the way things work. Well, where I was more comfortable and where most Missouri Synod congregations seem to be more comfortable with is the model of the pastoral church. Now, you can just kind of forget the number of worshipers. Don't make that an issue because, again, I can't defend that. Or to say it's mostly in towns and suburbia. You know, that's true for their church. I don't know if it's true for our church. But it's mostly the pastor as the one who is not the family chaplain, but the one without which nothing happens. You got your hands in everything. And as my first parish moved from the family church to the pastoral church, I got into a lot of trouble because I got a terrible memory. And I couldn't remember. I mean, with 40 people in church, 50 people in church, 60 people, as it grew, I couldn't remember who was in church and who wasn't. I couldn't remember the last time that they communed. I couldn't remember all those things. And I was expected to. And so what I did was I went out and I talked with the elders, and I was on my own. I didn't have a secretary. I was doing the bulletins. I was doing all that stuff that a good STEM graduate does. And I said, I need some help. We can't get you a secretary. I said, well, I still need some help. And I ended up going out and buying myself an Atari 800, which at that time, the whole setup cost me more than this setup. But I said, I need it. And here's some of the things that I was able to do with that. Not knowing piddledip about programming, just saying, here's what I want to do, and I bought a bunch of programs, and we had All Be Home for Christmas Sunday. What we did was we went through and we found everybody in the last 10 years who had ever been inside of our church that we could name. And we invited them home for an All Be Home for Christmas Sunday. And we did it upright. Now, for our small parish, we invited 900 people, 900 family units. And we got 235 to come. We were in deep trouble. We had, because the only reason we were able to do this is because we had a computer that could keep track of this kind of stuff. Computers won't do anything for you that you couldn't do on paper. But the fact is, you won't do them on paper. They're going to free you to do all kinds of things, free your time up to accomplish more. You won't spend any less time in the office because you got a computer. Some people get caught up and end up spending more time because they get mixed up as to what's important. What the computer will be able to do for you, though, is keep track of all the little pieces that you couldn't keep track of before or wouldn't keep track of before. It'll help you be a part of the pastoral church, because that's what most folks end up expecting. The next level up becomes the program church. You know, and in this case, a visitor, a new member coming in, the way they come in is through the pastor. You are the evangelism committee. You are the assimilation board. You're everything. And that's when you're talking about Pastor Tinsley's church in Queens. And, you know, people knew it as the pastor's church. That's really that kind of model that you're looking at. What I want to do is encourage you to read this book, because I don't want to talk about new member ministry. We do want to get on to the issues of computers. I don't agree with some of the words that they use here. Priest is enabler. I don't believe in the enabler model of ministry. I believe more in a leader model of ministry. And chief administrator, and we won't go into the other issues that we talked about this afternoon. But in the larger church, all of a sudden, the pastor becomes the one not through whom everything happens, but around whom everything happens. You still have the matriarchs and the patriarchs, and the new member comes in through programs. Now, part of our problem at Trinity is we got so many people coming in and out of our building, we can't do effective new member ministry because we can't keep track. There's absolutely no way. We do not have this down pat yet for a large church. If it would have been a smaller church, we maybe could have handled it. But we are so far behind the power curve, it's not even funny. But some of the things we can do are important, because we can use people. Everybody comes with a need to your congregation. They come with a need to serve. Now, the way most folks work it out, and I don't know if you ever use those little cards that you got when somebody put in a time and talent sheet. You could punch out little holes in them, and to find somebody, you stick a pole through and lift up all the cards, you know, and that guy. It's the exact same thing a computer will do, except they'll do it a little bit different, a little quicker. One of the things we're finding out is that people come with a need to serve. And as a church, what we have been doing is saying, we have a need to have somebody fill the slot. You know, our last speaker was just talking about being free to be you. We have a need to fill the spot, and so what we'll do is we'll go to our computer list and pull it all out, and then we'll go to the first five people, and we always call the first five people, and we never hit the bottom ones. We're changing that around, and because of our computer program, we're going to be able to change that around to say, you have a need to serve. Now, with your need to serve, with your spiritual gifts, how are we going to use you? Now, as a pastor, I could not keep up with all this stuff. I need something else to keep me going. There's all kinds of programs out now that'll keep you going. By the way, there's more. There's another model of the church, but you can get that through there. We want to get on to the subject of computers now. There's all kinds of options for you. You have hardware options, whether or not you want to do Apple or IBM or something else, IBM or IBM compatible. or you know, a clone, something that works like an IBM, they say works everything but may or may not in the end. You have all kinds of choices as to the quality of printer that you want to use, and those kinds of choices. In a sense, those aren't important, because for you as a pastor, what's going to be important is figuring out how you can plunk through all this stuff and get out what you need, and what you need to serve folks, and what you need to help them serve their Lord. What's exciting to me is when we get a group of men and women together who are beginning to find out the use of the computer and listen to what they had to say. We just finished up a collaborative learning group in Jackson, Mississippi. We're in the middle of working with one in Nashville, Tennessee. Or is it Nashville, Tennessee. What we do is we gather together a number of pastors and we say, we'll help you get going. And here's the deal. Anything you create, you share. Right? Second thing is, anything you learn, you teach somebody else. That's the way we need to be working with one another. There's so much stuff out there. When you say, what can we do together? One of the things we're sharing now as the congregation, we wrote a Christmas service. Anybody can get that Christmas service and you just say, could I have a Christmas service? I didn't bring a copy with me down because that would have been another bulk of paper. But also to you on diskette. And you can have 15 Christmas services. You don't even, you just pick and choose out of which ones you want and say, I'm going to take that part and that part. You can have all the prayers in the world. The way we put together Saturday night services is we have all the hymns we've used and we say, okay, put together a bulletin here, use hymn 1, confession number 2. We're going to use this affirmation of faith. We're going to continue with Lord's Supper, which is choice number 6, and close with this hymn. And it's just boom, 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 together. All the pain and the patootie stuff is done with. Can you do it with mimeograph? Absolutely. Can you do it with photocopying? Absolutely. Anything you can set up, can you do it with Ditto? Absolutely. It all works. It all works. And the technology is there for you to use. But how are you going to use it? What I want to do is start passing out stuff. And interesting things that are interesting for me that you wouldn't do unless you had a computer. Now, some of you already have said, yes, I've done that. How about, you're going to need a white one, a blue one, a green one, and another white one. And why don't we just split them up and pass them out. Something we've done in our family of faith is work together with worship pyramids. When you look at this, the way a population pyramid, are you familiar with population pyramids? Can I do a refresher course for population pyramids? Yes? Or you got it? Got it. The way you read a population pyramid is going, here's age 0 to 4, and you all have this one. It starts in Roselle, Illinois, 1986 census. 0 to 4, all the way up to 80 plus. That's the age. This side's male, this side's female. Here's the actual numbers. So, for instance, in the city of Roselle, 0 to 4, females, 4.7% of the population is female. And here, that's graphically shown here. The actual number is 915. Okay? And because I gave away all my copies, I can't tell you which color this is. Is it the white one? No. Yep. The white one. Okay? And you can see in Roselle, we've got kind of a bulb around the baby room, baby boom. Okay. All right, Pat, there should be, I made enough for everybody who's at the seminar, but some folks were taking things early. There might be a couple more around. We need a green. Okay, here's what we have for Trinity Lutheran Church, and that's going to be the The blue one. I can't. I'm having a tough time reading. This is the members of our congregation. And as you can see, if you compare the two of them, one of the nice things is on transparencies, you can take a quick peek at graphics. As you can see, we pretty much follow the general population. You know, we don't do too badly when it comes to our own membership. If you look up, there's Roselle. Here's us. We got the same kind of basic shape, stuff like that. When you get down to our worship population, and we did this as an average of four services. When you get down to our worship population, it starts looking a little muddled. Now, this is something that I would never do on my own at our scale. The reason we were able to do this is because the computer made it simple and we can pump this stuff out. You can do this every week if you want to. Just have, you know, what's our weekly population pyramid? For me, because we don't have a whole lot of development time here, I'm quite limited in the amount of time I have with you, and I want to make sure we have a lot of time for questions. But for me, what's significant is that the greatest worshipers we have is females 35 to 39. That's our strong suit. It's interesting to me, for instance, although we have a stronger base here with the kids, we don't have as many kids in church as we thought we did. We have a lot of kids in church. But in the 0 to 4 year olds, we have 22 females and 30 males out of over 320 possible kids. That's not so hot. And it's not diagnostic things like this or statistical things like this. It's just the visual of this tells us something about program. We wouldn't have done this without a computer because it is such a pain to do, you never even attempt it. But here's something real simple that you can say. You know, for instance, where would you say, just taking a quick peek, where would you say Trinity needs to change the program? What happens to members of Trinity? Or where would you say we got a strong program? Yeah, we got to do something 20 to 30 year olds. And you know what? They're the folks who have kids 0 to 4. You know? And maybe because one of the things we found out is I thought nursery was going along fine. We weren't having anybody down in nursery consistently. And this is back in 87. Last year, we're doing a little bit better now that we've changed our nursery program and made sure folks knew that there was going to be somebody down there at an appropriate time. But just a little change like that changes the response of folks to what God has done for them, responding in worship. You know, things like this, you'd see them, you'd think about them, and when I was talking to the staff, I said, we don't have the right number of kids in church. Well, prove it to me. We just said, forget it. You know, it's too hard to prove it. Well, we found a way. And you know what's really great about this? I couldn't figure it out. And a pastor down at Christ the King Lutheran Church in
Alabama.
I can't. Kurt Schultz. He looked at this thing and he says, "Oh, I know how to do that." It's one of the things that he shared with the rest of the church. We want to talk a little bit more about the kind of things when you're looking at different. Why don't we pass those around? And let me hang on to one of them. When you're looking at different software packages. As this is going around, let's talk about what's available on the market. I brought three of them with me. When we look at software packages, they go anywhere from about $400 for an actual church software package that's really not very useful. I would recommend that one to no one. To $4,500, $5,000. There's the one we purchased for our congregation's use as a large church costs $2,000. There's an awful lot of money that can be made selling software. However, There are so many things that you can do without buying into anybody's software package. The question is whether you want to sit down and do them. One of the things, you're using AppleWorks right now. Now that works on an Apple computer. And tell me what some of the things that you do using AppleWorks. We also used AppleWorks for a while.
Well, we have baptismal dates on, birthdays. We're just now generating the birthday list on a routine basis. There are five family groupings within the school, congregation, A, B, C, D, E for different types of Lutheran, non-Lutheran, et cetera, unsure. And we have codes for yes, baptized, no baptized, for each person against this. There's a full-on report format that we've established for getting the names of baptized, not baptized.
And what does that end up doing for you?
It provides instant information. If you're going to have a meeting with an alumnus, you might think of preaching or sending a letter to, and have
okay.
All the questions on, so you can generate the mailing labels.
Okay, so you can do mailing labels?
Yes.
That you don't have to hand address, or you don't have to type it out and put it through the photocopier again. What about AppleWorks does not do mail merge?
Yes, it has.
Or now it does?
Yeah, it does, but I don't know how to use it.
Okay. What that means is you can send a personalized letter. For instance, we just had an auction at Trinity. We raised a lot of money for the Mother's Club, and we were able to send a personalized thank you letter to everybody who gave. Says, thank you very much for contributing. You know, dear John and Jane, thank you very much for your gift of a toaster oven valued at whatever it is. Your support of Trinity is so important, and we're awful glad you were able to do that. But you can send out personalized things. We're going to talk a little bit about more about what kinds of things you need to be looking at in terms of the software package. What the most important thing for you to be looking at is what happens with reports. And that's these yellow sheets. This is a sample from the software package that we put together, the types of reports that are available. The most important ones begin on page 4, where there's a narrative. If you look on the back of page 5, you'll see a sample. Now, what we decided was, after looking at after reading Savage and all kinds of other folks, that we wanted to say our first report is, if somebody has been gone 3 weeks, we want to know about it and we want to do something about it. One of the difficult things you're going to find that is that as you move toward using computers, you're going to have so much information about people, and you really got to make the decision in your heart, I'm not going to ask for any information I'm not prepared to do something about. Because all you're going to do is muddle your mind and muddle the work of the church, which is one of the reasons, for instance, at Trinity, we are not asking for attendance information yet. Because we don't have anything to do with it. All we could do is report on it. And we're training a group now to do something about the people who are absent 3 to 7 weeks. And so here, for instance, is a bit of a sample report. It starts off, the group would be the elder group, the last name of the person, and the first names of the folks that are in there, their age, the status, whether they're active or baptized, the week since they last attended, the number of weeks since they last attended, and their home telephone number. You can print this out and say, okay, I just want all the people in group 1 because I know Fred's going to come in. He's the elder. He's the one responsible for making the phone calls. Fred, here it is, Monday, boom, you got it. Here's your list for the week. And just make a telephone call to them and say, is there something that we need to talk about? Or we've noticed that you haven't been in church these last couple of weeks. Can we help you in any way? Another important one is on the other side, when we're talking about number of weeks since you've last communed. Now, because of different congregations' practices, we made it between 5 and 11 weeks, because some congregations, we put this together kind of generically. Some congregations only commune once a month, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't keep on getting up names of people that just hadn't communed that month yet. One of the great things about software packages is that some of them will enable you to go through and change reports. Others, you cannot change reports. And this is one of the keys for working with anybody's software package. How much can I change? We were ready to purchase a software package from a company in Downers Grove, had put $500 down on it, had written out the check for the whole rest of it, and found out they would not give us what's called the source code. You don't have to know anything about computers. But if someone says, I won't give you the source code, your ears need to pick up. Because what the source code enables you to do is go through and change things. If you don't like the way it is, many computer programs you can change. Others you need to adapt yourself to. One of the things, for instance, LCIS, it is an okay software program. There's some things that can be changed, and they are being changed. But one of the things is they do not and will not give us. We asked them for the source code when we were looking around. They said no, that they could not give it because Missouri Synod doesn't own it. It's owned by a software company that Missouri Synod CPH contracted with, and they're keeping all the source code so that folks aren't able to change anything. Now you can get all the information out that you want. There are some custom things you can do, but you have to do some gymnastics, some thinking gymnastics, and sometimes some key punch gymnastics to get to them. You need to be able to get either the source code, or you need to be ready. I'll get to you in a sec. Or you need to be ready to pay somebody to make changes for you. Okay. Just quick comment.
Yeah. One word of caution: when you start messing around with source code, you immediately assume all responsibility.
Absolutely.
When you're talking about a program that has thousands and tens of thousands of lines of code, it may have a bug in there. You're buying a lot. You may not ever want to
use it. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely, because they can't support it.
Right.
However,
they won't support you.
Yeah.
They can support it.
But one of the interesting things, for instance, in our congregation, and when I preach around, I kind of ask this question usually in Bible class: how many folks would you think in a Lutheran congregation daily touch a personal computer?
I'm at about 30%.
In our congregation, and we are not as corporate as. As I thought, or I like to think, 75% daily use a personal computer. Have to, for work. All these folks know all this stuff. Now, for pastors, that's great, and it's also a challenge, because we have a pastor near us who we are going to help get into computers. His computer expert has already called me last week 7 times about little this, little that. He wants to make sure that he can work the computer software so that he can do what he wants to with it. And he really kind of wants to leave the pastor out of it. What we've made with the computer software that I stuck together and that has been worked on with a number of these learning groups, we made something that pastors can use as a tool. And it makes sense to pastors. It is written for pastors. It's not written for anybody else. And when computer experts get into it, sometimes things get mixed up. When they don't install things the same way, sometimes things get mixed up. So one of the things is what pastors tend to do is abdicate responsibility because they don't exactly understand what's going on and say, well, you take care of it. All kind of get it on the side. And you just can't do that. Pastor has to have a working knowledge of what's going on because you're the one who needs to get the information out. We had at Trinity a software package that we wrote 8 years ago before personal computers came out, and a big little computer that we brought in. Cost us an arm and a leg. Nobody could use it but Dottie. And Dottie became the information bottleneck. Dottie, I need chaperones. Who's volunteered for chaperones? Well, I can get to you in 3 days. Well, I don't need it in 3 days. I need it now. Who's let's punch the cookie button. Who's up for cookies this month? Well, I can get that to you. I'll put that on my list of things to do. No, I need it now. And you can have it now. There's ways to get around it. Well, these are the kind of reports you need to have right away. Who's been gone 3 weeks? Another one is, going on, the other than active list. We have a number of them here useful for On page 8, we turn to them. They're useful for building population pyramids. How many people do you have in each age group? Those kinds of things. These are reports that we stuck together because we knew pastors were going to use them. Class reports, directories. You know, here's on page 10, there's a sample directory. One of the things you may or may not like is the way that your computer software program puts together the directory. You may have a specific way of doing it. You want to do it that way, and you want to get it to look the way that you had it last year. For most computer packages, that's not possible, right? Were you working on the directory? Yeah. For most computer programs, you have to change the way you think. For ours, and some computer programs, you can go in and change them. If you don't want to put in birth date, just take it out. And this is nothing to say, well, I don't know BASIC and I don't know this. You don't have to. All you have to do is take out the number 1, or that's 1, 2, 3, 4. The number 4 starts at that column. Just take out the number 4, and it's gone. You can go back and put it back in too, or you can say, I want birthdays over here. We'll make it number 10. It'll go to the end. You know, so they've made computers now easy enough for you to get in and say, well, here's some of the things I'd like to have. And we're always looking for new things, birthday reports, anniversary reports. What I want to do next is just to take a look at sample screens, because you all can read all this stuff on your own. At sample screens, this is the software package that we've stuck together, and maybe, Rick, you can get into that. One of the things we've done with this computer software package is we've stuck a menu on the front, so you just pick a number, and you say, I want to go do this. We'll pick number 1 and punch it. This is not set up for the... Okay, if you go into File... Push F, and enter. Search update, S, enter. Move it down to mem sample. Mm-hmm. And there, and I'm not sure, I think in transit I've got a glitch on my computer. But here's, this screen is what you're seeing up here and what you have in the blue. This is just to give you an idea of some of the things that are important on any database. Of course, you have to have some way to identify a person. We use the code 100 to identify the family, and 01 stands for head of household. 02 stands for their spouse. There's ways to code through this. So immediately when you look at a screen, you can see, is this person the head of the household? Are they a kid? Are they an uncle? Are they an aunt? All those things are coded in. With many software packages, you have to figure out what codes you want and stick them in. With others, you can't figure out any of it. It says, this is the way you're going to do it. And so if you want to have any flexibility, you need to talk with the person that you're buying the computer software from. You need to talk with them and say, is this something that I can use? Is this something I can change to suit my needs or the way that I understand things? Of course, last name and first name. This last update, that shows what the last day that I went in and changed anything on this software package or anything on this person's file, Alan Abbott's. Of course, their name, address, and in our package, what you do is you type in the zip code and automatically it looks up what city it's in after you stick this in, their state, and assigns them a group number, assigns them by elder groups. One of the things we decided to say was you need to assign folks to elder groups geographically. I don't know how you all do it, but my experience has been so far that if you don't assign elder groups geographically, elders end up splitting up and picking the people that they want to have, and then after you've picked all the people they want to have, then you split up the rest of the congregation and you say, well, my son knows him or whatever else, and then it ends up they don't visit anybody anyway. So assigning an elder group is important, and that can be a pastoral decision. Going on here, on the first screen, you not only see that, but you see their status. This person is a status A. That means an active member. And we'll look at a help screen to explain what the statuses are in just a second. Of course, their middle name, their maiden name, their spouse's name. Prefix, Mr., Dr., Reverend, sex, and Sal 1 is your salutation if you're writing a letter to them individually. Dear Al. Thanks for coming to church this last Sunday. Salutation two is, Dear Alan Mary, we're so happy that your family is a member of our congregation. That's if you're writing to them personally as a couple. Suffix would be junior, senior, or the third. Whether they have an alternate address, because some people, especially those who have snowbirds, those who have go away to college, have another address. This would be yes or no. There's a place to put their other address. And then their mail code, whether they receive all the mail, part of the mail. You know, so you can really pick out who you want to target for different letters and communications. Their blood type, we always stick that in there. If we have an awful lot of blood draws in our congregation, so that's important for us to say, oh, we have a need for A-positive blood. Very positive people. Their last communion attendance and last church attendance and last gift. All that's in there. You can see that in this case, it's been 2 weeks since the last gift. It's been 5 weeks since last communion. So this person would be coming up on my communion list and say, hey, Al, what's going on? I noticed you haven't been to communion lately. Is there something going on? Because what's the main reason why people leave a church or drop out of church or become inactive?
Personal problems at home.
Yeah, personal problems at home. And so it's something that, now as a pastor, I couldn't remember all that stuff. And this saves me from having to remember it, because I can say, tell me all the people who haven't been in church in a couple of weeks and haven't communed in 5 weeks or more. Going on, their employer, etc., their birth date, their confirmation date, baptism date, membership date, whether they've been baptized and married here, and that's information for the next pastor usually, so he gets a feeling for the member of the congregation, the method they came into membership with, their wedding date, their membership or their marital status. This person, in our case, would be a person who is married, M, and they have children at home, M1. Their age is figured out automatically from their birth date and refigured every week, so you always have a constant. You know, that's especially important for kids. You know, who are all our 9-year-olds? That kind of stuff is difficult to figure out, especially when you're assigning people to classes. There's a couple of other things here that are not in most software packages. There's open fields. You can put anything you want in there. Open to it. Called on 12 on 215. That's the last person. It's just a note to myself that the last time we did this was on 215. Then here is another thing, an open date. The reason why that's on there is because of a gentleman in our congregation that I just happened to remember had been in the hospital a year before in dire straits. And the fella has not missed a Sunday since I said to him, Fred, wasn't about a year ago I saw you in the hospital? Isn't God great? He's watched over you this last year. I said, Pastor, I can't believe anybody would remember that. Well, here, wouldn't it be great on Monday to give a phone call to Elvira and say, Elvira, your mom died about 2 years ago. Wasn't it this week? Have you been thinking about it? See, all of a sudden, this becomes an opportunity for you to be a pastor who remembers, not for your glory or your praise, but because people want to be remembered. And it's a chance for you to be a caring person, an opportunity for you to be reminded of things that just would have slipped your mind otherwise. Now, you may or may not choose to use this. You can stick anything in here. You know, this one says on 5/18/85, his mother died. That's the codes that are in there. And when I'm talking about codes, you know, this stuff is not difficult things to figure out. In fact, most good software has what's called a help screen. In fact, why don't I pass these out too? A help screen is when you push, in the case of IBM, you push a button. The cursor is, if they're inactive, in the A. Are you over there? I'm sorry, in the status.
Yeah.
Over in the corner. There we go. If you're in status, you push F1. This little box lights up and say, here's the status. active communicant member, baptized member, friend of the church. And we use that because there's some people who never join your church but keep on coming back for one reason or another. Until mom dies, they're not going to do anything. Guest, that means out of town, other than active member, a prospect and a visitor. And we had different definitions for prospect and visitor. There's a cursor there. Since I've been here, something's going on with my computer. Transit was not good. There's 1, 2, 3, and 4 didn't come up here. As you look at the next screens, 3 and 4, you'll notice that at the top of 3, Sunday attendance information. That box that's got all the X's and C's talks about what week of the month they've been in church. You notice that the first week in January, there's a C there. That means they communed. That information is also noted down there. Altogether, there's a number of C's down there. Right below the box, they've communed 6 times. He's attended 66% of the time. He's attended a total number of 12 times. And the last year and last 2 years, all those X's and C's, those represent the pattern of this person for attendance. So you can see that he was a more regular attender 2 years ago. He started dropping off last year, and he's doing worse this year. And so it's instead of saying, well, here's all the numbers and here's just the guy's name on it, I want to be able to do some mail to him or write some mail to him, you can say, well, what's going on with this guy's life? Where's he been going the last couple of years? Not only that, what other things kind of things can computers do for you? We have an outreach database, and we'll pass that around. We have a worship database. If you just kind of pick up the screens, it'll give you a sense for what's available out there. In an hour or less, there's absolutely no way that I can talk to you about all the stuff about computers and what personal choices you should make. There are some things that you need to know about as you're looking for computers and what you're going to be doing in the future. One of them is that technology changes daily. Already the things that were written last year are really kind of out of date. There's an awful lot of, you know, when people talk about where congregations or where computers are going, IBM just came out with a whole new, a new model, a new way of doing computers called the Personal System 2. They run a different, what's called an operating system, something that the internal thinking process of the computer than their other computers. Computers are being dropped. One of the things, Rick's got a Sperry computer. There are some Sperry computers out there. It looked like there was going to be a lot of them. There aren't that many anymore, and he's having a little problem getting maintenance and things like that. You know, what do you need for a congregation? The way to go now is probably with what's called an AT or an AT compatible. It runs a little faster. That's what this is. It runs programs fast. It's got the capability to expand into the future, and capability also of what's called networking, where even in medium-sized congregations and smaller congregations, the possibility now of hooking all the computers together is there. And it's not all that expensive. For $85, I hooked 2 computers for a guy down in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, so he and his secretary could work at the same time. You know, you're not talking about millions and millions of dollars. What we've done as a congregation, however, is we've set aside $45,000 over the last 3 years, and we're going to pass out these to help congregations get into this. We feel this is such an important thing for a pastor to understand that my father and I and our lay assistant Ken Black and another pastor are taking this on as our pet project. And let me just tell you what we'll do, what we've been working on, what we've done in the past. We'll train you. We'll give you, for $200, you can buy a program called Q&A. We'll train you to use it, which is not included in the $200, but we'll train you to use it. We'll give you all the software that you need to really get going, a word processor, something to do your sermons, do letters on, or do the bulletin on, some way to hook it in with the membership database, and it includes an English interface in this case, which means that you can type in, literally type in, who hasn't been here in 3 weeks, sort them by alphabet, give their telephone numbers too. And if you type in those words, it will give you an intelligent answer. And then you say, well, I really didn't want them sorted alphabetically. I wanted them sorted by their elder group. It'll change it. So that's one of the key elements of what we've done. Our deal is, and Rick's doing this down in, with the group down in Mississippi. We've completed their training, and they're getting ready to train 40 more pastors. That's what the group they want to take on. Because the deal we say is, if you get into this, we'll support you. We'll do everything we can for you. But you got to share. That's number one. Number two is you got to teach. Be ready to teach. And so we are making trouble for people who are trying to sell software. And it's the way it ought to be.
You might not have been understood when you said the $200. That's not got anything to do with you. That's just...
$200, that buys the software pack. It's just like going out to a computer. If you get buy it cheaper, buy it at a computer store. You don't have to. We've been working this out with districts and having the districts throw in some bucks, have AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood and other folks throw in some bucks. The congregations throw in some bucks. We throw in some bucks and make sure that for instance, in the Northern Illinois District, we are making sure every mission congregation has the opportunity, if they want to do this. Yeah. Okay. If you're not interested in doing it, pass it on. I'll give you this one. But you know, here's the sense of what we do. We go through a series of 3 2-day meetings. Talk about the mission of the church. Work through a lot of practical stuff. Give you a lot of homework so that you can do an evaluation of your community, an evaluation of your congregation, give you all the tools you need to get going and to make some decisions about your church, about how you organize, about how you lead a congregation. We've got some understandings that we have about it, but it really ends up being whatever you what you come to peace with. And what we're able to do then is say we're going to give it away. I make no money doing this. Nobody in this makes any money. What we do is we try and cover, you know, traveling expenses and things like that. So I'm not going to lose money doing this either. But I'm not in the computer business. I'm in the pastor business. I'm first a pastor, and I've got a large responsibility in a parish of my own. But we see this as an opportunity to serve the church at large, and to increase the Gemeindlichkeit among Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. All the time we get asked, why would you want to do it? Why would you do that? And our answer is, why would we do it any other way? Isn't that why we're here together? So I've got 15 minutes left, and everybody comes, as much as folks want to talk about other things, everybody comes with an agenda and some specific questions, and perhaps we'd be able to help out with some specific questions or some concerns if we just open it up now and say, what would you like to talk about? I brought a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about too.
Well, word processing is certainly a big thing. How has this changed your sermon preparation?
For me, my sermon preparation has not... a couple of years ago, I stopped writing sermons in that I don't write out all the words. However, one of the nice things is that there's still a bunch of guys who do. And we're able to share sermons with one another and freely share sermons with one another. Guys say, here's something I wrote, boom. If you can get a piece out of it, if you can get an illustration out of it, go ahead. Why not? And you don't have to say, I heard the pastor one time, and you know, just go ahead and use it. But for bulletin preparation, it's a lifesaver. Because what do you do? All you do is you go through and say, well, this week we were using matins. We're going to use this hymn, this hymn, this hymn. You already have the matins form out. You just plug in the different hymns. Bring your announcements from last week, attach them down at the bottom, and you're ready to print. In terms of bulletin preparation, when I was working in a small congregation with a setup that was not made to do what it was doing, I moved from getting a bulletin out in probably 6 or 7 hours to getting a bulletin out in less than an hour, once you get the system going. But for how many of you are you your own secretary? Yeah. That's a lot of difference. Yeah, and you're your own secretary. You are a secretary. What kinds of other things can I help you with?
What exactly is Q&A? And then what does it do for the Q&A to make it do this?
Okay. Q&A is a database, which means it keeps track of pieces of paper. Flat file database. It's just like a file cabinet. It also has a word processor hooked onto it, which does the typing and the bulletins and everything else. And it's called an integrated package because you can easily move information from the database into the word processing into the database. It also has an English language interface, so you can use English to ask it questions and to do other things. You can type in, run the 3-week absent report, and it will do it. If once you teach it how to do that, once you say, this is what I mean, but what I really mean is go over here and send this out, figure out who's been gone 3 weeks and send it out to the printer. So that what it does is it becomes a more useful tool as you move along, and it allows you to do a lot of what-if questions. What we do to it is write an application for it. And one of the great things is you can change anything on it. And it doesn't affect source code. It's just, you don't have to have programming languages. I really don't know a whole lot of, I have no programming background. I don't know a thing about it. But what I do know is what I needed as a pastor and what needed to happen. And I just started asking questions, and I found all kinds of people to help me. That knew what they were doing. And I said, okay, that's nice to help me. Now, how do I make it so simple that my father can understand it? And that's the way this thing evolved. So what I do to it is we just add an application. And you can add, people have added, now they're starting a music database. Think of all the music that you've got stacked away that you never used because you forgot you got it. All the thousands of dollars worth of stuff. Or how about, what if you put it on a database and send it over to your brother pastor and said, we got this, what you got? Why buy more music? Why buy more music?
So, the police might have with your servers then, we walk by the community package.
Or we buy it. It doesn't matter to me.
Whoever
yeah.
comes together, you give us a disk that has your application.
Yeah.
We stick it on our computer and we play with it. What type of documentation do we get with that to understand how your application is put together?
Okay, what kind of documentation? Because here, now you're not in a learning group. Mount Calvary is not in a learning group. All you did was use it, because Dan Picorni asked me, he said, could you ship one down to me? I said, sure. You've got no training, right? You're just saying, wow, here we go. Is the documentation helpful? Because now you're putting me on the spot. Okay.
First of all, we're using WordPerfect as a word processor.
Yeah.
With the Q&A, I am not using Q&A to its potential at all.
Okay.
At all.
But what we do is we give you, it's a book this thick. Of all the, part of it is that yellow pad, all the report things. Sample reports and things like that. How do you do this? It gives you step-by-step instructions. One of the problems we came up with was that at Mount Calvary they decided not to install the program as we suggested. And so automatically I got a phone call and I said, gee, I sure don't know what you're doing, because that same kind of support problem. If you do step A, B, C, D, and E and call me on the phone when it doesn't work, I say, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's basically it. But you are not buying a service from me, in a sense. You're not buying anything from me. We're trying to give it away and share it.
So literally, if I want to watch you and Ahab on the computer, I look to you and send me your application.
Sure.
And that would be it. And we'd be able to use it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's got its own online tutorial, too.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
Which means?
It tells you how to do everything. I mean, if you need some help in the middle of something, you can go to the tutorial.
You say, oh, gee, I don't know how to do mail merge? Or what is this thing? I want to change this. How do I change a report? Oh, I can go back over to the tutor, and I'll say, how do I change this report? And it'll go through and teach me a lesson on how to change the report. You see, things are so simple now. And the tough thing is that we want to make it a lot more difficult than it is. And we want to say, if I close my eyes long enough, I can retire before I have to deal with it. what you're doing is missing the boat. I mean, who would not want right away, rather than asking somebody to go through all those cards and figure all this out by Thursday, getting that report on who wasn't in church on Sunday, who wouldn't want it that day? It takes members. We have a congregation near us is using this. They're averaging 150 in church. It takes them 10 minutes to enter the attendance, and then he gets his report out. Yeah. What we do is we have something that also writes quarterly statements. All those reports are in there. All that stuff's available. You don't have to sit there and slave over, you know, all writing down, holding on that ballpoint pen, hold it, pushing down hard enough so it goes all the way through. Nobody has to do that anymore.
Yours is designed primarily for an IBM. Some of us are Macintosh people.
Yeah.
What can you do for us?
Well, one of the things is I can show you all the stuff we've done on IBM, and it's, you know, none of this is a mystery. There are software packages out there for Macintosh that will do the same thing. It's just a matter of sitting down and saying, gee, should we do it? Are we ready? The reason why we chose not to do Macintosh, because it is an easier machine. It's more fun. Got a little mouse and things move around quicker. The reason is because there's not a whole lot of business applications for it right now, and that's not where the business world is. And what we said is if we want to go, if we want something that's going to stay the course, because already, who has a Lisa? Who had a Lisa? Somebody had a Lisa.
Same guy who bought the
info. Yeah. but that, what happened to the Lisa? It was the great thing. Apple said, this is the new computer of the future. We're ready to go. And it lasted a year and a half. And you can get them cheap now. And if you got them, you're in a lot of trouble. So that's the reason why we decided to go with the IBM. You had a question.
This morning we talked briefly about your note-taking on your lap. You said you would say something about it tonight.
Oh, I've got a lap. If you saw me punching around, one of the reasons I bring a laptop to these things and use a laptop rather than write is because I've gotten into the habit of it, taking notes in school. But the other thing is to let folks know that's how little computers are getting. I don't know if I've got enough cord to get over here. The original IBM PC, which really, I mean, it just celebrated its fifth or sixth birthday. Oops, somebody locked it on me. I locked it on me. Who locked it on me? I really locked it. This computer here is the equivalent of the original personal computer. You can get them now, computers just a little bit larger than this, that are just like that. Do the exact same thing. One of the things when you're looking at computers, something you have to watch out for, because pastors like bells and whistles. One of the things I want to caution you about is getting a computer that works in color. The screen you saw here is, we didn't show you color because I really don't want to show you color. I don't want anybody to see color because that's an $800 monitor. We have a very special use for that in terms of our publishing software, that because we could afford it. But it's $800. Most computers, color monitors that you get are much lower priced, the ones that you can afford, and they are not easy to read. You know, you'd think color would be better because I'd be able to have things stand out and flash, but it just doesn't work out that way. It makes it much more difficult, and to get a monochrome monitor, that one color monitor, is going to end up being a lot more useful for you, a lot easier on the eyes. And you can get them in green or kind of an amber color too. Oh, let me see. Why don't you demonstrate it?
I don't know what to do with it.
Well, wait. One of the things you can do is press the space bar.
Where's the on button?
Well, the on button is in the back, and I turned it on. Now it's getting ready to go. Okay, what's on the screen? It's kind of hard. It's going to be hard to see. There's not
first
a whole lot of light.
Computer, copyright Toshiba, copyright Microsoft.
Okay. And now, there we go.
Sidekick.
If you hold down both shift keys, push one shift and then the other shift. Okay, let go.
Oops, I held it down too long.
Okay, do it one more time. And now it says to do a note taker, hit F2, which is up at the top. And now you're ready to go. Start typing.
Just like normal.
Just like normal. It's kind of hard to do on there. Yeah.
The pastor's toolbox and Q&A.
Yeah, that everything, our application is called the Pastor's Toolbox. And there's an awful lot of stuff. Much of what you have been listening to today is stuff that we cover. Well, perhaps, Rick, you've been through it. Why don't you say some of the things that get covered in it?
A big part of it has nothing to do with computers. It really has to do with what this whole seminar is about. And that is, what is the mission of the church, and how do we go about doing it? What kind of attitudes to have, and so forth. Charlie Mueller, who some of you probably know, is sort of the pep talk giver regarding this. And he brings in some other people, Chuck included. Chuck's the technical part, and Charlie is the philosophical part, I guess you could say, or theological part. And once the foundation is set philosophically and theologically, then they go on and start dealing with, okay, now that you know this, here's some practical stuff that you can do with it. And figure out, they give you all the details of what to punch in and how to do it. Just the practical kinds of things, too.
And out of this group, then, this group that we taught is going to teach more and teach more, which is the way we ought to be doing it to begin with.
Disciples making disciples.
Yep.
Have you started using a modem?
Not really. The reason is because they're expensive to get into to begin with, and there is a Lutheran net that's being formed. A Lutheran network is starting here in St. Louis, and there's some colleges that are on it. Most districts are going to be on it this year, and then they're going to open it up to individual congregations, perhaps. All call documents and things like all the personal information stuff is going to start being stuck all together, so it's a little easier to get from one district office to another. Yeah. That's what I talk to. You see, one of the problems is the folks who are doing much of the computer work in Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, I'm not sure are really talking to the users, the pastors and teachers, all the time. And so a lot of the plans, I just happened to have somebody who said, why don't you take a look at this after the whole plan's done? And it's really not going to be helpful for the at the congregation level all that much. But one of the things I said is, why not put Graebner's Doctrinal Theology on diskette? You can't get the book anymore. Everybody wants to use it. Somebody borrowed mine permanently. I'd love to have it back for catechetics, and you can't get it anymore. I have to wait for somebody to die and give one up. Why not put out-of-date books on diskette? And, you know, wasn't that cheaper than publishing them?
Somebody in Florida is putting the Book of Concord on diskette. Working on it right now.
Good.
So
anticipate to have it finished this year.
Good. I'm not sure if you wanted to have this. I've got more copies. This is just an individual worksheet, something you go through with a personal interview. You can work these out. This is all available. We give this to you on a word processor, so you can go through and make it your own for your own congregation. Add your own questions, etc., and add your own groups. What I hope to accomplish this evening is just to give you an idea of kind of what's your appetite toward what's going on, what's available. I can be available for the next half hour if you want to talk about a specific application or you'd like to see a demonstration. I'd be happy to show folks.
Are there any more of the order information sheet?
I'm not sure that
we didn't get it.
Here's some with, I'm not sure that these are all complete. I think this is the basic information. What we suggest folks do is that they work through districts on this, because we'd be very happy to work through districts on it. We do have a collaborative learning group that's going to begin this, the end of this summer, up in Chicago at our place. If you're interested in traveling up there for a seminar, I'd be happy to hear from you and happy to see that you get housed right and take care of you. We have, at Trinity, we have probably 20 pastors who come through for different seminars or to visit us, and we always put them on.
What are the dates, Charles?
Don't have dates yet, because we haven't looked at Charles Sr.'s filling up the calendar again.
How do we find out?
What you do is you write to Trinity and say, I'm interested in doing this. And we'll say, in the next month or so, we'll get all the information out.
Awesome.
The cost will vary, because if you're coming to Chicago, it's going to you're going to take care of it. Well, it depends on the individual congregation. Altogether, if you buy everything through us, do all the training through us, the cost is going to be less than $3,000 per congregation. Now, how much that district AAL, everybody else pays, is going to, and I can't give you an exact cost, because for us to come down to you all, I think it ended up being, we sent you down $6,000, you split it up among 9 congregations, whoever, some didn't need anything, some needed some stuff, out of that, I think we figured it out at $2,800 a congregation. To get everything done. Now, out of that, the district paid some money, everybody else paid some money. I don't know if you got some money out of it. Yeah. But we're happy to help where help is needed.
I don't understand. I read that. The district puts some money towards hours.
Well, what you say is to your district is, I think we'd like to try this. Can you give us a hand? And we've had 2 districts, actually the Southeastern District asked us to come down and do the whole district, and we just can't do that. So we're talking about what's going to happen next.
Like, or the whole congregation can pay for itself.
Yeah, oh sure.
Yeah, fine.
See, what we're trying to do is, we're not trying to undercut anybody, or do things, anything other than to say, it's important for this kind of stuff to be out in church, and to tell you the truth, if you use it for 3 years and trash it, you won. Because none of this information is, you could always transfer it over to another program if you decide to go bigger or different. It's applicable up to, we're going to install it at Kalamazoo at a congregation with 700 worshipers. That's the biggest church we ever tried. So we'll see what happens.
So that includes that computer?
Yeah, $3,000 includes that computer and a printer. And all the stuff.
What quality printer?
Good. The printer we chose was picked. All the stuff we chose just happens that PC Magazine and everything else has said this is the best you can get. Q&A is the editor's choice.
for PC Magazine, InfoWorld, PC Week. It got in InfoWorld Software Digest, it got the highest rating of any software package ever. It just, for some reason, the business world has passed by, but I'm very happy about that too.
You know, you had asked me, and I probably didn't give a fair answer to what you asked me about the documentation and so forth. I think when you're thinking of computers, there's a lot of work to be done before you put that thing in the office. And a lot of that was not done at our congregation. And, you know, as far as how you're going, what you want it for, you know, what you're going to be using it for, deciding on how you're labeling people and why you're, what kind of statuses you're putting it off.
Yeah, we give you suggestions, but that was, see, the rest of the congregation, other than you and three other congregations, everybody got the training and the software at the same time. So they didn't have to make those decisions until afterwards. But if you just say, I'd like to have it, we'd be happy to give it. The other thing is you can't give it away to anybody else. You can say, I'd like to see to it that this person gets it, and I'll give it away. But that's just so that we keep track of where everybody, so we can keep track of where everybody got. You know, not that we're going to charge anything, but we just got to know in case, like, there's a new upgrade to it. How do I send it out to everybody? So we just got to keep track of it. Okay.
You said that workshop was going to be, how many days?
6 days total, and we split it up over 6 months. I think it's 2 days and then a month and 2 days and a month and 2 days. There's 20 assignments. Some of them are, they start off being very statistically oriented. They end up being very organizational oriented. What are my plans for the future? Set some goals. And how does my church work? You know, is my church any of these models? How do I learn how to use what I know about the way churches work and the way people work to the glory of God. Okay, you allowed me some extra time. Thank you.